Hello, friends, and welcome to another episode of Just Another Kill Team Podcast, connecting Kill Team communities across the globe. Your hosts today are me, I'm Jason.
And I'm Travis, regular co-hosts.
We connect with all sorts of different people, TOs, competitive players, and just anyone else that has something interesting to say that they message us and convince us to talk about on an episode.
Yeah, we do like making the world a little bit smaller, one hobbyist at a time.
We do have a Discord and a Patreon, which is definitely some stuff that you should check out if you enjoy our content.
And if you do enjoy this podcast, make sure to share it with your friends who play Kill Team, because the more, the merrier.
Today, we're swinging around back to the West Coast to talk to Chris Bakke about Blades of Cain.
Good evening, gentlemen. How are we doing? How's your week?
It's going.
It certainly is. It's
sometimes
been...
that's all we can say.
Got a busy weekend with Apocalypse coming up, so.
Which Apocalypse is this now? Just to make sure I'm tracking on it.
40K Apocalypse. It's like 40K, but then we're going to have Kill Team also be a part of it, because, you know, obviously I run the Kill Team side. So we have basically my shop has like a long-standing narrative campaign that at this point is just kind of loosely a rough score tracker for like wins and losses with campaign rules. But every 3 months there's an Apocalypse game, so everyone brings out their big toys.
Oh, that's fun. Oh, you're talking about, okay, 40K Apocalypse. Yeah, I know that one.
But like in this one, we're going to have like the Thunderdome. It's going to be a Nurgle Slaanesh Thunderdome in the middle that the Kill Team players are doing, where they like live, die, come back again as fast as possible, and every 30 minutes, based on the number of kills, we're gonna like give buffs out to people.
That's really fun.
Yeah, and I think I'm gonna have like the world explode out from underneath them, which, you know, that should be fun.
Didn't you guys do some sort of event where there was like a game that was being live streamed and people would vote on which Chaos God would do something, and then there were changes in the game based on the Chaos God? Was that an NYO thing?
No, we weren't able to stream any of the narrative stuff that we've been doing. I think this year we probably will be. I think we're going to be streaming our corpse of the corpse of the living god boards, because we're going to get, we have a Reaver Titan that we're basically like turning into a set of boards.
Well, unless something insane happens, I will be at this NYO. I've been fucking frustrated. I haven't been able to make it before, so I'm super, super stoked for that.
I mean, you were kind of in the background of the first one.
floating. You can see me in a few frames. Exactly.
You helped. You helped assemble the goodie bags for all the players at the first one. So
yeah,
you were not there.
That was fun. I was there in spirit.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I still have swag.
I'm curious. Is there a date nailed down for the next New York Open?
No, we're getting pretty close. I've got like a handful of people that I need to finish like convincing that this is a good idea for us to expand out to the other games, because it is a lot of extra plates to juggle, basically. But once I have that, then we're going on to the next.
So you're planning it expanding it out from just Kill Team.
Mm-hmm. We're gonna expand the space. I think, because part of the problem for running these events is if you just run Kill Team, it's kind of hard to make the numbers work. At least from what I've found in New York. New York's a hard place.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Anyways, you know, for anyone who's curious who this is Chris Bakke, you know, West Coast, one of West Coast top players for sure.
Yeah, I've been around to a few events, and I just like playing some Kill Team.
A couple world championships here and there.
He's been known to kill a team.
One time, there was one world championship I was in. Another one I was just
not even the one that counts, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Took third that one. Not too bad, but Ace and Orion definitely edged me out, and they've both been making a habit of that. And I'm looking to try to turn that around this year, but we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I mean, well, there's plenty of tournaments coming up. We're about to hit like the summer kickoff.
Oh,
right?
I cannot wait. I'll be at Dallas. I'll be at Tacoma. I'll be at Nova. I'm gonna be everywhere.
Well, I'll see you at Tacoma.
I can't wait. And then according to certain people, I've heard whispers of a California gold rush. So ooh. I'm eagerly looking forward to that as well. I guess a lot of golden tickets are coming to California, and I cannot wait.
Yeah, I mean, as far as coming up golden tickets, the Atlantic City Open will have a golden ticket. I will be running it again. I'll have a special FOMO terrain for anyone who's not going. We'll have some custom terrain that has the ACL logo on there. Yeah. So very exciting. Yeah. And, you know, there's like the tournament circuit is coming up for this year for all the competitive players. You know, I don't know how many Jason's gonna make it out too, but I know Chris is gonna be making it. Are you gonna be doing it on Blades of Cain?
So I love the Blades of Cain. They're a really awesome team. I don't know if I'm ready to bring them to a golden ticket event, but holy moly, are they a fun team to play.
They are super fun. Yeah, and obviously for any listeners, we brought Chris on because we wanted to talk a little bit more about Blades of Cain, because I think me and Jason are very in love with the Howling Banshee SKUs. But Chris, you know, he took Blades of Cain out to a tournament pretty recently, and I looked at your roster. You have 7 Striking Scorpions, but you don't have 7 Banshees, or like 8 Banshees.
Yeah, so I'm a controversial person on this one. I don't believe in Mono Banshee. I don't understand it, and I've run it a few times in some test, you know, practice games, and, you know, basically the way I think about it is, in any matchup where Mono Banshee would have been good, having some Dire Avengers is even better. And I know, shoot me, tar and feather me, you know, take me out back, and then, you know, whatever for sort of liking Dire Avengers. But in a nutshell, my feeling about the team is, in order for your opponent's melee operatives to play honest and give your own Scorpions and Banshees a chance, you need Dire Avengers there to press them and to make them not just, you know, take certain positions and to give you the advantage. The problem is that Dire Avengers are not nearly consistent enough where that's going to work reliably in a lot of matchups, and that's where the team really starts to struggle. So that in a nutshell is what I think really keeps them out of being a contender for top tier play.
Yeah, I mean, I found Dire Avengers in all of my games with Blades of Cain to be perfectly acceptable at doing their job, and I think that is totally fine. And then I found Striking Scorpion personally, I haven't super loved them, because they just feel like 4 or 5 dorks with swords. So I was surprised to see that the only SKU list you could potentially take was Striking Scorpion. So did you ever actually take Mono Scorpions, or was that just like how you built your roster?
I did not run the Mono Scorpions in that event, but Mono Scorpions have a reserved place, especially against Vetguard and Pathfinders, of which I have run those matchups, and they definitely deliver the business there. And then a theory crafted that they're going to be just fine into Wormblade as well, although I have not actually put that into practice. A lot of the what Striking Scorpions are there to do is to allow me to play against a shooty horde to create a lot of asymmetric scenarios where I can attack them and they can't hurt me back. There was a game in a tournament a few weeks ago against a Blooded player where I was sort of sitting behind a door, and this was turning point 2. It was actually getting pretty late in turning point 2. There were some kills on both sides, and I was pulling slightly ahead. And there was this very obnoxious thug sitting pretty close to the doorway that my opponent was trying to bait me into a situation where if I charged the thug, I could probably get the kill, but I would end up just getting drowned in Ogryn and all the other Blooded BS that you of course know that quite well. And so what I did instead was I ran out from behind the door. I did the little mortar wound party, and then I went back behind the door, right? So that my operative was completely safe, and I just done some free mortar wounds to the enemy, that chip damage. And you know, in general, I think, what has made me appreciate Blades a lot is just their ability to really reliably deliver chip damage and do it safely. I'm also a huge believer in the smokes. I absolutely love the smokes. I had a game against a Breacher player on Into the Dark over this last tournament for Pacific Skirmish. I didn't take a plasma grenade. I only took smokes, took 2 smokes, and they absolutely did work. Breachers really do not like obscuring. Holy crap.
Yeah, I can't argue with ignoring, like, obscuring being important, especially against, like, the shooting teams. And as much as Breachers have their melee operatives, a lot of their damage is done up close with shotguns and, you know, other big guns, right?
Yeah, it's mostly just Axe, Jack, and the Breacher is the only ones who can reliably deliver melee. And once you sort of zone those operatives out, they start really being struggling for tools to deal with melee stuff. Scorpions love ITD. They love the ability, you know, I had a play where I charged a Scorpion Exarch into a room, killed an enemy in the room, then did the switch to conceal and free dash to get up to a doorway, and then did a hatchway fight for my last action. Getting a tremendous amount of movement, 2 fight actions, ended up super safe behind a door on conceal after the whole thing. So, you know, again, it really comes into finding ways to click the aspect needs together to make the just really lean on that mobility. One thing that anyone who plays Blades, I think, will observe is that anything that looks at you or sneezes at you, your operative is going to fall over. Your 8 wounds with a 4-up save, no invulns, other than the Shimmer Shield, which is a meme. So you really have to, just not take damage and just not get shot, because if dice get rolled, you're going to fall over.
Yeah, unfortunately, 4-up saves, yeah, sometimes they're okay, but unless you get rerolls because you're forewarned, which means you haven't activated, like, there's a lot of conditions for you getting shot and being like, maybe okay. that it's probably better to just not get shot.
Yeah, and if you're playing in such a way that someone could maybe shoot it there, it's probably not. It's probably pretty far from optimal.
Yeah, and I have yet to play Forewarned.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things about the team that's nice is you have a handful of operatives that can take charges reasonably well, right? If a Striking Scorpion gets charged and you kill them, you can actually get a free dash, right?
I
want to say
I have to check, actually.
I'm almost 100% sure it is when you get a kill, you get a dash.
I don't think Strike and Fade is the one you're talking about. I don't think you can do that while you're not active. I would have to check, but I think active...
No, it definitely says after you're on engage an incapacitant enemy operative that is more than three from enemies, you can do the dash.
Oh, there you go. I have used that on guard before, which is hilarious.
Yeah, so like Striking Scorpions can take a charge okay because sometimes they get a free dash afterwards. Like you get injured, but you're like, now you're like out of position afterwards and you're like, all right, cool, if you mess up the attack step you get a free move. And then Banshees also are one of the people that can take a charge because you get a free parry.
Yeah,
a parry first, basically.
Yeah, Banshees are great at taking charges. Generally the way that I try to layer the team, I almost always run mixed aspects, a 3-3-2 of some configuration, and it's usually Banshees in positions, you know, somebody's gonna have to take a charge and Banshees are the ones I'm gonna have to try to take the charge. It's you know, if you've played against Blades a few times, you'll definitely learn that unless you stack one of your charges, you cannot afford to send sort of chump models into Blades. With the combination of just Contempt and getting free movement off of kills makes that very, very dangerous to send anything other than, you know, solid melee operatives at them.
Yeah, I did feel like one of the spots where I found the Howling Banshee, like mono Howling Banshees, to be surprisingly good was actually the six Marines, just because the power swords ended up mattering quite a bit, and you could actually take charges against the five attacks on threes, 4-5 Marines reasonably well, because you can do double parry over two separate operatives, so you could take two whole separate charges. So that's actually a spot where I wasn't expecting it to be good, but it ended up being better than expected, just because of the ability for the Howling Banshees to take Assault Intercessor charges better than they look like they should be able to.
Yeah, I just... I haven't tried running mono Banshee against Intercessors. I did find it pretty effective against Phobos and sort of 50-50 against Legionary. Against Intercession, the math really worries me of a durable duelist Assault Intercessor running at you. You know, even on the charge, you're not likely to be able to get the kill. And if you get charged, you know, you may squeak five damage out before you just get, you know, trampled over. You know, for me, I'd much rather have the chance of getting some chip damage off, knock those 14-wound beasts down to, like, 11-10 wounds, and then the Banshees and Scorpions can try to do their job.
Yeah, using the Dire Avengers. I have yet to see anyone try to meme and do all Dire Avengers, and I assume that nobody on the West Coast has even attempted such insanity.
Yeah, I don't even have the stones for that.
I have three of them, so.
I don't think Dire Avengers scale well enough. Where the aspect techniques for Dire Avengers aren't interesting enough, where I think the opportunity to double dip on them really means that much. You know, I guess that the joke that I say is the best Dire Avenger aspect technique is the tactical ploy to shoot twice. That's their best aspect technique, but it costs a CP. And unfortunately, going mono Dire doesn't help with that. I am now a firm believer in the Shuriken Rifle Dire Avenger Exarch. I roster him, and I ran him against Gellerpox. I also run him against Cops, and I find in both situations, being able to just consistently get four hits in and then crit spikes, really, really valuable in certain matchups.
Especially when you give him no cover.
Being able to just slap for no cover on demand, being able to get the sort of semi-torrent-ish on demand is just really, really nice.
And he shoots twice for free.
Shoots twice for free. Yeah, the Dire Avenger Exarch on the rifle build specifically, I think is not bad. I can't understand any of the other builds, especially the twin rifles, which is just a downgrade. I don't get it. But yeah.
Yeah, I do remember at the World Championships, I was asking the head designer, I was like, why did you do this to this poor operative? Why would you make his double gun the coolest option so bad? Because it's just like, there's no reason for it. And he even got downgraded from Compendium, because in Compendium, the solo Shuriken Catapult was four dice on twos, 3-4, balance, rending. Now it's four dice on 2, 3, 4 rending. So it actually lost balance in the transition.
All the rifles lost balance, which is a really, you know, I don't love that change. And I think the team would actually be in a pretty solid spot just giving them balanced back. But then the rifle build has a downgrade to the ballistic skill and a downgrade to crit damage. Where is that coming from? I don't get it.
He's just not as accurate. You know, he's just hitting around the eyes instead of directly on the eyes.
Did he go to the discount dollar store shurikens too? Like, is he buying the cheap ammo for that thing? Like,
yeah, he's loading up generic shuriken.
Inflation when you got twin catapults is really hitting hard or something. I don't know.
Yeah. It's honestly a shame because the shuriken catapult also requires you to take your dorky melee profile. So then you have to pay for the equipment to push you up to 4 attacks instead of 3 attacks.
Not only do you have to take the equipment to push you up to 4 attacks, you're still only then hitting on 3s. Like, you still have you don't get Exarch accuracy out of it either. And it costs an equipment point just to play. They did fix the thing where in Compendium, the Dire Avenger Exarch in that build didn't even have a melee weapon, which I thought was hilarious, and didn't get to roll dice in combat.
So many silly things.
So at least he has fists, but it's less than ideal. I'm definitely a lot warmer on Dire Avengers than other people are. But my biggest frustration that I see when people are talking about this team is saying that they'll just die when you charge them or die when you shoot them, because it's not that that's not true. It's just that there's a lot of teams you could say that about as well. You know, like Corsairs are the same way, where they're 8 wounds of the 4-up save, and if any Corsair gets charged by the Ogryn or shot at with a fusion pistol, it crumples as well, right? These things aren't unique to Blades, but with only 8 operatives, you need to be really, really crafty at how you position everything and how you use the techniques.
Yeah, I think one of the coolest things about the team is once you can activate all the aspect techniques over the course of the turn, so you're striking Scorpion, goes in, spits acid at someone, buys time for holding a door so that your opponent has to work around this awkward striking Scorpion, so that then a Howling Banshee can jump over a wall into a pile of dudes, kill a dude, and then dance over to another person. Like, those are the things that you're really looking for, but you have to use 15 extra rules simultaneously, and that's part of the fun, right?
Yeah, I quite enjoy it. You know, on a sliding scale from Intercession to Warp Coven, they're much closer to Warp Coven. This team doesn't hurt my brain quite as much as the Wizards do, but it's close. You definitely have to keep a lot of things in mind, and there's a lot of specific triggers to certain techniques. You know, certain techniques you have to be active, certain techniques you just need to be involved in a fight. So you definitely have to keep all of that straight, and there's a mental load there.
Yeah, some of them you have to be an active operative, because the strike and fade from striking Scorpions is interesting because you can do it whenever you get a kill. But yes, the flip side for the Howling Banshees is you have to be the active operative when you strike with a crit to get your dash out or your 3-inch fallback. So those triggers are similar because they both involve you hitting someone really hard and then dashing away. But one of them you could do at any time when you get a kill, and the other one you could only do when you're active. And they call it out, but it's very easy when you're learning the team or when you're in a tournament and there's a lot of mental load for things to kind of get wibbly wobbly. Because striking Scorpions and Banshees have lots of similar triggers, but they are not quite the same.
Yeah, the Banshee trigger for parry first, they can do it regardless of if they're active or not. But the Scorpion stun technique, which I think is the worst technique overall for the entire team,
by far,
only be active. And I keep explaining to people, the number of situations you're the active operative and being able to parry something like that matters is virtually negligible. You have to manufacture a scenario where you don't get bodied anyway, or you wouldn't have killed the guy anyway and just taken one hit. That's probably the worst one. The meme move of the recon dash doing one of the gloom is also very amusing. That's one of my favorite parts of the team. And being able to gloom twice against Vetguard or Pathfinder, similar teams, is very, very strong.
If you played mono striking Scorpions, you could gloom 3 times.
Yes, and I have in fact done that, and it is as hilarious as advertised.
Yeah, so it's 2 of them because you can double dip on your aspect techniques because you are mono. And then it's also 1 of them because of the scout dash, which technically Correct. Lets you trigger it. So that's what lets you do it 3 times.
And it's outside of a turning point.
Outside of a turning point, yeah. So, yeah,
that's clever.
If the team had a way of getting multiple dashes. Yeah, I mean, it really does. it's a funny move. It really does, though, let you put a barricade in a cheeky position that a vantage point can easily see, but you gloom up and like you can take positions a lot of teams can't take. And you do it pretty cheaply because other teams, you know, for example, Hand of the Archon, they have a ploy to give them super conceal. But that's expensive. You don't want to pay a CP for, you know, to mitigate maybe one or two shooting attacks. You know, that's pricey. But this, you're just saying the word gloom and smiling. You know, it's pretty easy to pull off.
Yeah, especially with the trend of a lot of competitive players to play a way safer turn one than we were, I think, in the beginning of the game, right? Where turn ones tended to be a little bit bloodier than where we are right now.
Yeah, you know, I've noticed the same thing, and I can't help but think the sort of the crit ops pack and the way that games often are sort of like approaching this middle point of both scores tend to be pretty similar, that players are really, really hedging on being able to max their tac ops, which a lot of the time requires, you know, not just like turn one to go well, but all the turns to go well. And the risk you run in a larger tournament is you do some crazy alpha, and maybe it even works. But if you take some, you know, just some punches in return, you might win the game, but the game might end up being low scoring, and then, you know, you end up sort of shooting yourself in the foot for the rest of the event. So it makes sense from like a meta perspective.
Yeah, I think at the World Championships, it was like a huge thing where all of the alpha striking that I think all the commando players had been practicing and expected to happen basically were stymied by all of the other competitive players on Chaos Cult figuring out where to put their barricades to stop the commandos from moving up and lining up behind. I think there was one game where there's an Octarius piece and all of the Chaos Cult models were literally touching the wall, fully hidden from line of sight and wall blocking, so there's nowhere for the commando player to move their breacher boy into attack.
I think I saw that picture, and I mean, I can echo that. When I played Colts for a little bit during Hot Colt Summer, I picked them up after their first big nerf, but definitely still back when they were much stronger than they are now. And yeah, definitely like commandos are a little bit of an existential threat of being able to like so many tools just absolutely slam you hard early game. And you know, unfortunately, against Colts, you're forced into that play style of looking for cheeky alpha moves like that because they play this, you know, time is their friend, and you don't want to let them play that game.
Yeah. So, you know, we brought you on because of this SoCal tournament where you took Blades of Cain. You know, there was a lot of good West Coast players there. How did you feel like Blades of Cain performed over that tournament? What were your matchups like? And in your one loss, you know, what do you think you could have won that match if you had played a little differently, or was it kind of a matchup thing?
Yeah, my loss was actually my favorite game of the event. I played against a gentleman named Casey, a lovely, lovely individual. Fantastic game. I had definitely a series of things that happened during that game that just did not go my way. You know, a bunch of key moves that just didn't pan out. On paper, I still think Hand of the Archon doesn't have the flexibility it needs to play into Blades, and I would give Blades generally a favorable time in that matchup overall. So, you know, I didn't play it perfectly, and I had a lot of moves that just didn't pan out. But to the onlookers, I think they're very entertained by just a sort of a comedy of you know, I would try these cheeky techniques and do all these cheeky moves and didn't pan out, and then I would try some other cheeky thing, and made the game really, really fun to watch. So Dakota, the TO, was getting quite the kick out of my pain. So he quite enjoyed that. Let's see, my first game of the event was against one of the Kelly kids, Malachi. Very, you know, very pleasant opponent. He was rather he's a younger player and rather new to Void Dancers. And the nerfs
newly nerfed Void Dancers too.
Yeah. And it was newly nerfed Void Dancers. The fact that I could bring multiple Dire Avengers just felt like I always had an oppressive shooting threat that they could not ignore. Who cares about your invuln save when I have rending and I never cared anyway? And then Banshees were absolutely as capable as a player in most situations. And in some situations, kind of almost better, especially due to how much better the Blades fly is. The second game was the Hand of the Archon loss. The third game, I played against Breachers on Into the Dark, and definitely felt like the combination of being able to have crazy mobility, 3 APL, and all these free dashes and smoke grenades gave me a tremendous amount of tempo against Breachers. I also have a ton of experience playing against Breachers. They're a team that I've played against probably 50 or 60 times at this point. So I knew his team extremely well, and also just got lucky for a few initiative rolls that didn't hurt either. Also, Breachers hitting on fours and having access to attack order rerolls don't like the fact that I can contempt to turn it off. The breachers like to have a couple really power moves, you know, using their breach and clear maneuver or other things, and really, really need the rerolls to be in play through all of it, and being able to contempt on demand was super, super painful. My last game was the game that surprised me the most, and that was against Jimmy Kelly. He was running Gellerpox, and I was terrified of this matchup. I've played against Orion's Gellerpox a number of times. Always a great guy to play with, and I really don't like Gellerpox. Coming to this matchup, I felt pretty concerned about it. I felt that they have so much meat, and I have so little meat, that just the numbers game will start happening. I can't stop it from happening, and I will just get run over at some point. I took a Dire Avenger skew build of 4 total Dire Avengers, including the Dire Avenger Exarch, 2 Banshees, and 2 Scorpions. And it worked tremendously, tremendously well. The kind of crazy moment of the game happened in turning point 1, where I got a Banshee with a Plasma Grenade and Recon dashed up on engage. And I'm getting ready. I played against Gellerpox before. I need to hit them hard. I need to hit them early before I just get drowned in Rust Emanations. And so I move this Howling Banshee up, and Jimmy sees this Howling Banshee, and he's like, there's no way I'm going to let a Plasma Grenade go off in my backfield. I had enough Dire Avengers where he had to deploy suboptimally and where a grenade would do work. So he used Recon Dash and Drawn to the Hum to get Volgar up, and he charges Volgar. He gets first activation turn one and charges the Banshee with Volgar. He has balance on his melee weapon, but only rolls 2 hits.
Ooh.
I immediately pop Contempt. Don't even bother parrying first because it doesn't matter. And he realizes that if he doesn't parry me, the Banshees has enough crits to act potentially like knock Volgar down pretty heavily. So he has to parry me. I parry him out. And so my first activation turning point one, I've got a full health Banshee with a damaged Volgar sitting in front of me, which was obviously tremendously lucky for me. The game from there was a bunch of Dire Avengers running around, shooting Hulks with shurikens. All the Dires died by the end. They did not make it, but they shot a lot, and I played the shoot twice ploy every single turn. So it was a lovely game. It was really interesting to me how quickly their wounds melted, because I had a ton of guns that were fairly accurate and had no AP, which was actually exactly fine against Gellerpox. So that really surprised me, really not suffering from the lack of AP. So ended up edging out on that game, and was really surprised at how many tools I had through, jumping around with Banshees, to using the stun move as well to get stuns off when I needed to, crit when a fight wouldn't go my way, really more flexible than I thought.
Yeah, I actually, when me and Jason were on the Monday Stats Show looking at kind of like the overhead view of what happened, we're like, oh, Chris played against Jimmy. That's pretty interesting. Like, you won. And the first thing I went to is like, oh, maybe you played the 8 Banshees, because like with 8 Banshees, you have 2 stun profiles and you've got all the dancing around, so you can use all the small guys to like one shot and move over to the next thing. And if the Hulks charge you, you parry first and maybe you survive. So I was expecting like, oh, maybe that's possible. And then we looked at your roster like, oh, that's not possible at all.
Yeah, like all the stun stuff. Like, that was one of the games. Like, I've played the 8 Banshees against Gellerpox, and I feel like it's a nightmare for Gellerpox, because it's just, you can get there and you can just kill the goons and you can stun the big guys, and then they just don't have enough APL to do anything, and they can't even like charge and fight you. And then like if they do charge someone, you can just like another one runs up and fights
just and fall just back eats them apart. Or fight crit dash back. Yeah, you've got so many options.
Yeah, you've got like all the chip damage, you can like stun people, and then you can like just like crit and jump away and count that as like chip damage, and then like all of the little goons can't do anything, and then like with contempt you can just like brazenly charge a Hulk, and then just like contempt lock it into one success, parry that one success and do like 16 damage because you got 2 crits and a hit.
Well, careful, contempt can only be used in a fight where you're not the active operative.
Oh shit, have I been cheating this whole time?
Contempt is when you get shot at or somebody fights you.
Okay.
I think I might have been cheating this whole time.
Well, but that's classic Blades, right? Like, Jesus. And it makes sense if you think about the ploy. It's like when somebody does something to you, it's like F you to them, right? So
Yeah. I think that does. It is definitely in there. It says it is not the active operative or shooting attack is made against you. Yeah. All right. Well, I've definitely been cheating. Not that I've played that many Blades of Cain matches, nor have I played in a tournament. So I guess it's all fine and bridge under the water.
I think it's stronger anyway, denying a move that your opponent initiated, because opponent initiated moves are ones that they are banking on more likely to succeed. So I think the ploy is actually stronger as written. I don't find myself yearning for it to work differently.
Yeah, I don't know how often I might have actually cheated, but I definitely have not internalized that part of it. To be fair, I think I've played like 10 games of Blades. So I doubt it really mattered, mostly because I never wanted to actually bring them to a tournament, because the eight, like, they have the Void Dancer problem, which is you've got eight operatives with eight wounds. So the band of acceptable play at a tournament is very, very tight.
Oh, you cannot afford to make a mistake with Blades. It is painful. Although comparing them to their clown brethren, I think Blades is definitely the better team at this point.
Before when, you know, Void Dancers had fly, I probably wouldn't have said it. Now I would maybe make it a 50-50 with, you know, Blades having different strengths that are definitely probably more fun to use right now. I feel like Void Dancers are a little bit too much work right now with how they play.
Yeah, I'd probably agree with that overall. But I think Blades are definitely better than people give them credit for. I think a lot of people don't play the team the right way, but they also definitely have the same problem Void Dancers do, where they top out at higher levels of competitive play. I mean, there's a reason we haven't seen Void Dancers win a big tournament in 2 years, right? Disrespect to any Void Dancers players who have won events that I may not be remembering, but it definitely hasn't been like a trend.
I think for the large 5+ round tournaments, Void Dancers might make into the top 10, I think, pretty consistently, but they're pretty much never in striking distance for, or in a very minor subset of cases, Void Dancers are generally not in first, second slot. I believe it happened at Tampa last year. There were two Brooklyn players basically playing for first, second. And I think, you know, it came down to Commandos versus Void Dancers. And woof, that matchup, I don't think that matchup was possible back then.
The pre-just a scratch days, it was very different. Yeah, I mean, obviously the Commando nerf helped Void Dancers. I digress. Blades of Cain definitely have the same problem that their sister 8 activation team has.
Yeah, I mean, you've been all over the spectrum for teams. You know, we've had a long history of playing together across the country. You went from Veteran Guard to Blooded to Blades of Cain right now.
There's a brief Novitiate era. There's a brief Hand of the Archon.
Yeah, true. You did score your ticket to the first World Championships. That definitely happened, regardless of what GW says, with Novitiates. Do you feel like all of those other experiences have helped prepare you for Blades of Cain in some way? Or do you feel like Blades of Cain has kind of activated a different part of your brain that you're like, oh, look at these tools that I didn't know that I could use?
Oh, I definitely think everything before definitely contributed toward being able to drive the Blades of Cain horse effectively. It's weird to say. I think ironically, the team that prepared me the most for this team was Blooded. They have a very similar vibe of there's a little bit of shooting that the team has, but that shooting is critical to making the team actually work, and you can't just do the melee thing, at least not most of the time. So I would actually argue that maybe Blooded was, obviously, that like they're a very different archetype, very different profiles, like thematically the teams are different. This is a hypermobile team. They're more of like a, you know, click, plug and play who's going where, but that general philosophy over the ranged empowering the melee to work, definitely I got a good hang of that during the Blooded days.
Yeah, forcing your opponent to keep their heads down because you've got a plasma gunner with their stupid shield in the background. Every time you pop your head out, a plasma gun blows you up. You're like, okay, I gotta avoid that guy. So you gotta keep more dudes on conceal, stick closer to the terrain, and then suddenly an Ogryn hits two guys when you weren't paying attention.
Diabolic bomb goes off somewhere. Yeah, I got diabolic bombed as Blades. It was painful. Yeah, did not feel good. I'm like, oh, this is what that feels like. Okay, got it.
Yeah, you know, we've talked a little bit about Blades of Cain, the SoCal area. Obviously, you're in California. California is very different from the East Coast and maybe the Midwest, where traveling out is a little bit different. how have you found the West Coast scene grow over time? Because, you know, we've been playing for a long time. Obviously, the East Coast was where a lot of the competitive tournaments were happening for a while. Feels like the West Coast is bringing up a lot more competitive players nowadays. So, you know, talking to us a little bit about the tournament scene and the West Coast, because we do love hearing about other scenes, right, Jason?
Oh, yeah.
I would say, you know, 3 years ago, it was like the Spaniards were really the stars of the show. And then East Coast really came to their own, you know, in like, you know, sort of 2022, 2023 era, really like KTO. I think that the first KTO and second KTO really, you know, solidified East Coast's dominance. After that, you know, I really got to give credit and shout out to Dakota, who's been running a tremendous West Coast tournament scene. And I think he has definitely done a lot to drive a much higher competitive caliber. I noticed a sharp difference in this LVO compared to all the previous LVOs with just, you know, the types of players at mid tables and how strong they all were. So, you know, the West Coast scene has absolutely evolved and developed. Of course, there's sort of our sister group of Kill Team Cascadia up there in the north. I know they're up there fighting the good fight as well. But there's a ton of really talented West Coast players now. That's a pleasure to play with. Even a lot more in our local scene. You know, we've got a big local regional Discord for Northern California. There's a bunch of teams, you know, with Team Swag starting to pop up around here now. You know, one thing I'm really excited to is that there's players up in NorCal who can whoop my ass, which I'm very, very excited to have. And so that when I go to a tournament, I have some matchups where I'm like, oh boy, this guy's going to really, you know, eat my lunch. So really, really excited that all these things have happened. And, you know, shout out to all the wonderful TOs and team captains in the area. It's just great to see the game evolve and looking forward to the next big West Coast versus East Coast battle.
Yeah, and like, how often are there tournaments, and like, how many people are showing up?
We're running regularly now three tournaments a month. There's three different like groups that are running tournaments. We got a Sacramento group, an East Bay group, and a North Bay group, and each of those groups is running a tournament every month. And we're now regularly getting 10 to 30 people at these tournaments. So it just varies on, you know, which exact area. But we're getting a lot of regular play now from a ton of different players, which is awesome to see. I know SoCal is driving the same thing. We're between LA and San Diego. They have a ton of events going on regularly now, two events a month between smaller and larger events. So yeah, it's really thriving. You know, Travis, I know we had talked a few years back where we would struggle to put up, you know, once a quarter an 8-man tournament, and things have changed a lot since then.
Yeah, I'm glad to hear it. I mean, part of us, me and Jason, setting this up to begin with was to catch up with some of these other TOs. So actually, when you brought up the Sacramento group, we actually have a podcast episode with them from last year, back when they were doing like 6-man tournaments. I think they've gone up a bit, right? Like, you've gone out to their tournaments too.
Yes, yeah, the Cadia Fight Club, who John is sort of their ringleader. Lovely, lovely folks up there. Yeah, I try to go once a quarter up to Sacramento. It's like an hour and a half drive for me, so it's not just across the street, but it's really, really great. And they come down to our tournaments as well. So it's really, really great seeing the Cadia Fight Club folks. And they've built quite the scene. Yeah, they're putting up. They've got regular game nights every week. They've got a few different stores where they run events, and they're easily, consistently now running 16-person events.
Yeah, it's super great to hear.
Yeah, no, it's and it gives me more people to play with. I love this game, so I'll you know, always happy to see more people grow in the scene.
Yeah, one of the fun things that California has, because Dakota is kind of like one of the big ringleaders in the California region, and then up north you've got Tyler kind of heading up the Pacific Northwest region. At least in SoCal, because Dakota has the regular squad games, All Valley team tournament, there's always a big incentive for teams to get out to SoCal, I think, towards the middle end of the year, right?
Yeah, it's in the like early September time frame. So that actually leads me into a question. Are we going to see Brooklyn Strategist / Brooklyn Rats coming out to AVTT this year?
It's maybe possible. I think it's definitely on the cards. Right now, my priority is getting the New York Open settled and done, along with ACO, Goonhammer Open, and all these other like tournaments that are coming up during the summer. But I'm definitely not against doing a little bit of traveling this year if the stars align with everyone's schedules, just because everyone's got a lot of stuff going on. So I want to make it happen.
I can't recommend the All Valley Team Tournament enough. Having a 2-day, like 6-game event of a team tournament is just so tremendously fun. It's an experience like no other for Kill Team. And it will have a golden ticket this year. So,
they're going to give out three golden tickets or just one golden ticket to someone on the team.
I think it's going to be one golden ticket to like the overall top spot. So that might lead to some awkward conversations in the car ride home for the winning team of like, you know, whoever got that ticket. It's going to be a great experience, and I'm really, really looking forward to it. And I'd really like to see some East Coast folks there. We had Orion fly out last year, which was really, really great.
So I was there the first year.
Yeah. So I'm hoping, yes. So I'm hoping we get both you and the Plasma Spammers out here. It would be really, really cool.
Yeah. Maybe I'll try to wrangle up, some of my NorCal friends, and I'll just, play in a team tournament with them, and just it'll just be an excuse for me to come back to California for a bit.
Yeah, you just got to get three. Not so bad.
Yeah, there's a couple dudes up in NorCal that help us run this podcast that maybe they'll come down and they'll just derp around on Intercession or something.
Hey, you'll still have a great time. Well, so that's the thing, right? You can pick the matchup. So, you know, if I'm running Blades or something, you know, just send the Intercession at me and watch me sweat.
True. That's true. Yeah. Sometimes a stat check is definitely a thing. Or we'll send four custodians against the Blades of Cain.
Oh, no. Please, no. No, no, no.
Yeah, because I think back when when Corsairs first came out and we were like trying to figure out like, oh, what matchups are like not good. I played against four custodians one time and I was like, oh, no, this is not fun.
Yeah, that seems really, really painful.
Yeah. You know, I mean, can you imagine getting lined up with custodians? Like the 2-5 custodies mix with Blades of Kain on In the Dark.
Yep, I'm just nope. Don't need any of those flashbacks.
Oh yeah, dude. One of the funniest stories I had about the last Kill Team Open was when we were talking about you were on Blooded and you were going up into custodies. And you were like, "How bad could it be? It's a compendium team, Travis." And I was like, "We'll see." And then two hours later, I come back and I'm like, "How'd it go, Chris?" You're like, "Couldn't do anything."
Yeah, there's. I don't know if I've ever felt quite so helpless as I did that game. I just realized the situation where there's a Sister of Silence and a custody in a room, and I had the Ogryn sitting there like full health, ready to go, and I was just like looking at the math and thinking about it. I'm like, oh, I'm gonna lose like either of these fights potentially. Like I don't have anything here. This is my strongest melee operative. Oh no.
Yeah. For longtime listeners who have been with us since we interviewed Jimmy Kelly at the last Kill Team Open, that was definitely one of like the highlight stories of that event for me. It was me and Chris, because we have a long history. He comes up, he's like, "Oh yeah, I've got custodies coming up. I'm on Blooded," and I was like, "I don't know, Chris. This seems pretty rough." And Chris is thinking, "Like, is it?" And then 2 hours later, he's like,
"Very naive." Because I was thinking to myself, "Oh, thank God it's Into the Dark on Open. It might have been a problem, but thankfully there's like doors and stuff to help." No,
yeah. But to be fair, that was like the big surprise of that tournament. Like, I don't think any of the big competitive players at the time had really thought about that matchup at all. I just had happened to run into it at a tournament the week before, and it turned out that custodians were kind of like the breakout hit of that Kill Team Open, because it was an all in the dark tournament, which definitely skewed what was or was not good.
And it was also one of the biggest tournament. I mean, it was a huge tournament. That was fairly recently after the new Crit Ops update, which gave everyone an extra command point. And that's one extra turn of Aegis of the Emperor. And that also definitely made a difference. That is, you know, the most busted ploy in the game. So, yeah, wow.
Global no crit damage is very, very powerful when a lot of operatives. I think this is also a thing that Intercession players who don't ever take tilting shields are missing out on, is there's just a lot of melee matchups where people are expecting one or two crits. And if you never get crit damage ever, a lot of the breakpoints just kind of fall apart on what is considered a good melee operative. Because Corsair Voidscar, they're good melee operatives because they have 4-6 lethal 5. But if it's 4-4 on threes, you're like, what? I'm not really doing much.
Yeah, that makes a massive swing. Yeah, well, I'm looking forward to a glorious summer tournament season. I'm definitely going to continue playing Blades for some of these. Although I've been eyeballing a different team that I might try to be a little more competitive with and see if I can win a golden with. So we'll see what happens.
Well, I guess you're going to keep that one in the back pocket for the time being.
Yeah, I might be playing an event tomorrow where we're
okay. All right. How are you feeling, you know, before we head out for the night? I'm actually just really curious, like, how are you feeling about the meta as it stands right now? Because obviously, by the time this comes out, all of the tier lists have come out, and me and Jason refuse to do any boring tier lists of just rating teams because we just haven't done it. You know, where are you feeling like the meta is? I feel like higher tech is really good. You know, was there a higher tech player at this most recent tournament? Are you scared about them in general?
I am somewhat scared about higher tech in general. That said, I do think the data slate kind of fixed them in a way where it makes them more consistent, but also removed, you know, like defanged that really awful, you know, giant nanomine, you know, takes half the board move. Really, really happy to see that severely toned down. No, I think Kill Team is overall in the best place it's ever been. So really, really happy to be playing this meta. I'm curious how Nightmare teams are going to shake out, but I'm sort of feeling that they're not going to be as apocalyptic as people are worried they're going to be. I do think that Nemesis Claw is probably the best elite team in the game, but not by much. So, you know, I think it's going to be okay. One thing I thought was really interesting looking at the tier lists is that people are still ranking Commandos as, you know, what they're calling S tier. I don't see it. I think the Just a Scratch nerf has changed so many matchups for them drastically that Commandos are in a perfectly healthy space now. And I genuinely am not sure what I would consider S tier in the game at this point, which I think is wonderful. I think that's a great, great place for the game to be. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think I honestly agree with that pretty well as well. Like a lot of the same kind of wave tops there. I don't think Nightmare is that apocalyptic. Nemesis Claw does look really good, but like looking at it from the perspective of other elites, I'm like, I feel like I can play in against Nemesis Claw and not be like completely doomed, which is cool. There isn't anything that like super duper jumps out. I'm like, I still think Vetguard is still really good because I mean, they've just, I don't know. They've been rude to me too many times. And yeah, that's all these tiny little baby taps, I'm like, it needs more.
I honestly feel like Commandos getting placed at high ends of tier lists is a little bit of that, where everyone remembers the last, probably like basically what was the longest stretch of one team dominance, I think, in Kill Team history, of basically just like almost a full year of Commandos just pushing people's faces in. So I think there's a little bit of that. I do think that a lot of their medium matchups have gotten worse just because there is a lot of crit pushing kind of all over the game, right? Between Rending, Lethal 5, on Power Swords.
1,000%. And, you know, the Void Dancers matchup is a textbook example of a matchup that was awful for Void Dancers because they could never charge a boy and not have a serious risk of, like, at least taking half health, if not just dying, if things go wrong. And now, you know, they take the Rending weapon and get a single crit in while they murder Sentrance. They've just one-shot the boy and take no damage back, right? Like, that is how massive of a swing. I saw people in Discord saying, oh, the Just a Scratch nerf isn't a big deal. It just changes one damage. Like, no. Yeah. It swings massive fights. And from playing in a few events since the data slate, all the Commandos players have felt the impact, and I have not seen Commandos place well at any of the events.
I think the other thing that I heard a lot from the Commandos players at the World Championships and elsewhere throughout last year's competitive season is everyone else knows all of your tricks because everybody else has had to play against them so often. So you have to play perfect if you want to do really well. And now that a lot of the top end power for the Commandos has been tapped a little bit, now your opponents still have all those tools, but you have lost those same tools. So now you have to play even better. And that band of like good plays has narrowed down a lot. So I suspect that, you know, they'll definitely drop, and they definitely have dropped on the weekly stats. I think this week they were down to like 40%. So it might've been good enough. And hopefully the GW balance team doesn't swing back the other way and go say that, oh, you know, they're down at 40%. Maybe we need to buff them again. Cause like, I don't think we want that. I think they're fine. They were fine as a B-tier team that was fun that everybody had access to. We don't need them to be dominating for the next like 3 months.
Yeah, they would never like buff a formerly super oppressive team and give them like crazy power.
It's never happened before, Chris.
No,
the nightmares will never come back, Chris. It's
no,
fine.
No. Or sometimes you become the nightmare.
Yes, you'll don the Batman headpiece and go dunk people with your Vox screams.
Yeah, you know, it's like, again, Vox Scream, it's spooky, terrifying, but Omni Scramble's been in the game. And I know it's not the same as Omni Scramble. I know it's different, but Omni Scramble's been in the game since Phobos, and it's annoying, but you can work around it.
Yeah. I think I'm pretty excited to look at where the meta is going to be over the next couple months, especially because it doesn't seem like we'll have a new release. But a lot of the tournaments are coming up right now, so it's like a stable-ish meta while the events are going. So we'll get a fun time.
Yeah, oh definitely. I mean, you know, that tournament I was just in, Pacific Skirmish, had a Compendium Guard take the first spot with Scouts taking second and Hand of the Archon in third, right? Like,
pretty good.
That's not a meta blown. And this is an event with stacked with some really talented players. And I even showed up too, right? So it, like, that's really so you know, it was a great event.
Yeah. I think the meta's in a good spot. I just put my base coats on my higher tech circle. I don't know when I'm going to get a chance to play them, cuz I never get to play in anything cuz I'm always running them. So So yeah, I'm excited to give them a try cuz I have all three of the Cryptex too, cuz I was like, "Yeah, why not?"
Where do you fall on the rights of reanimation debate?
I think it's pretty firmly in that the Technomancer gets all three abilities. Like, they were pretty clear about striking the first paragraph, which is the thing that you choose. So I think it is just an ability. And I think enough of the TO, it seems like a lot of the TOs kind of are on the same page. If I went to a tournament and someone told me that was not the case, I would be fine with it. Like, I don't think that's how it's played, and I'm not going to run it that way at my tournaments, but I can respect another TO's decision in those situations, you know?
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, right, I don't think it makes a huge difference, because I still don't know if Technomancer even makes the cut. But I say he's on a 50mm base. Let him have fun, right? Like, what are we doing here?
Agreed.
He's a big boy.
If like the goal was to internal balance, then you've got to, like, you can't just like poop on him every time he tries to like come out and enjoy some sunshine.
Yeah. And poor Psychomancers is still in the corner crying, but maybe one day he'll have his day.
I don't know. You know, it sounds like you haven't listened to the podcast ever, which is totally fine. But at least in the Midwest, there has been a Psychomancer player just terrorizing Jason's local meta.
Yeah, he's been bringing the Psychomancer out and wrecking everybody's day, and he's been doing that for a long time.
Well, I would love to play against that, and I'm not saying the Psychomancer has no play. However, it's really hard to not just look at that 5+ feel no pain and +3 inches of movement and not just consider that an auto take spell every single game. And I really struggle to not see how you wouldn't just take that and the Nanomine still. But I would love to see otherwise. And a great player can win with a lot of teams, right?
So. Yeah, I think it's definitely a case of it's not rawly as powerful as those abilities, but because you get different strengths with the Psychomancer, you can make those strengths work in a hand, like in a variety of situations.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
You know, and it goes back to the theme of what we've been talking about, right? Like Blades of Cain, really fun, super flexible, and can place a lot higher than the stats would suggest.
Yeah, and like,
but they may still hit a wall.
Yeah, we talked about like how much it messes you up to not be able to score crits at all, and like that's one of the Psychomancer's big things as well.
Yeah, it's a big bubble of no crit damage,
and it's just straight up like no crits. So like a Meltagun, then your crits just like lose them. Like
I've played against him before. Yeah, the experience I had was that yes, that's an incredibly strong ability, but in order to use that ability, the Psychomancer has to be really close to the action. And, like, you can find a way to deliver 13 damage, even without crits. And that's been my experience. Now, your mileage may vary, and certainly, you know, I'm definitely ready to play against an opponent who can make me eat those words. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, and it sounds like with the West Coast on the resurgence, eventually you're probably going to run into some higher tech players.
I've got some locals who are eyeballing them. So, yeah, we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, they took, you know, they took the Midwest by storm. Hopefully we'll see some good results on the West Coast, and we'll have some other stuff to talk about, because, you know, we've got our Monday stat show where we've been covering the week-to-week undulations of the meta. And actually, surprise, surprise, this last weekend, Chris, Blooded had a 70% win rate.
Yeah, I think Blooded are one of the strongest teams in the game at this point. I would definitely agree with that. The rest of the meta has been continually getting chipped away at while they're just sitting there collecting blooded tokens. Yeah, I that does not surprise me the slightest.
But you played them enough where you're kind of like taking a break, right?
It would take a lot to make me play Blooded again. I can't play another team that only can do Seek and Destroy. That just can't seek and destroy one more time.
It's
really, really boring. Oh, look, you played Bloodbath. How exciting.
Luckily for you with Nightmare, if Nightmare is a trend, we're probably just going to see, you know, every team releasing with 3 or 4 tech updates.
Yeah, jeez.
That's definitely one of my big complaints about Nightmare is that both teams have access to 3 of the 4 tech up decks, kind of removing the point of having the distinction at all.
Yeah, I think the game's at its best when a team has 2 tech archetypes. I think that that's a healthy spot. I'm glad Blades were designed that way. I think the game's, I think that's better. I just wish more teams had Infiltrate, and I'll just continue to, I bitched about this before, why don't Blooded have Infiltrate? I don't know if I'd take it, but just Why isn't it an option? I'm probably not going back to Blooded or Cults for a long time. They're just very repetitive play patterns, and I want to take a break from that.
Yeah. All right. Anything else you want to talk about? Any upcoming tournaments in the Bay Area or other shout outs for teammates or, you know, what's going on?
Yeah, what big shout out for the Bay Area Championships coming up on Memorial Day weekend. That is the 25th and 26th. That should be the largest tournament we've run up in NorCal ever for Kill Team. Sort of a side tournament to the Bay Area Open, which is not happening for Kill Team this year. So if you are on the West Coast, want to come out to a really killer tournament, join me for Memorial Day weekend up sort of near Sacramento and Vacaville for the Bay Area Championships. Can't wait to see.
And we'll, of course, have links in the show notes to make sure that shows up. And, you know, for anyone listening on YouTube, hopefully this will come out before then. You could get tickets if you're in the area.
I sure hope so. We have a month. So. All right. Well, thank you so much for having me on. Have a wonderful evening. And looking forward to playing some more Kill Team, you guys.
Absolutely. Yeah. Thanks for coming on. And thank you, listeners, for listening until the end.